Evening, everyone. Let's turn to James. I have the notes. I've given you the notes. So we are in James chapter 4, verses 11 and 12. James chapter 4, verses 11 and 12. It says, "Speak not evil one of another, brethren. He that speaks evil of his brother and judges his brother speaks evil of the law and judges the law. But if thou judge the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is one lawgiver who is able to save and destroy. Who art thou that judges another?" So in this passage, James is coming back to the one of the main things he is teaching us, and that is to control our tongue, right? To control what we are saying. So he's coming back to that same topic, that we should not be speaking evil against another brother. And in these verses, he's going to give us very powerful motivations of why we should not do that. Okay, very, very serious. It's very serious if we really think about these verses. So this passage is going to teach us about how a mature person controls his tongue. We already learned that, right? A mature person has tamed his tongue. He has controlled it. So the tongue needs to be controlled, right? No one has, naturally the tongue and what we speak, maybe, you know, we don't think, and we, most of the time, the tongue will just say without thinking. But a mature person has tamed the tongue. He's in control of what he speaks, right? He thinks properly before he speaks. And we also know the tongue can go out of control, especially in the face of trials, because James is in the context of trials and testings. So when we are facing trials and testing, it's all the more important to control the tongue. And in this passage, specifically tells like how in times of trial and testing we will be tempted to, you know, speak against another brother, and this is very common, right? When we are going through bad times, we tend to find people to blame. That's the first thing that comes out, you know, out of us. We either blame a person, a literal person directly, we blame the circumstances, and of course, we blame God. And all these blaming ultimately comes down to we blaming God. But, you know, complaining about other person, murmuring, and playing the victim, like, I'm going through all this because of someone else. Playing the victim, giving excuses. It's all immaturity. And basically, it's sin. And a mature person doesn't do that. He doesn't find people to blame. He doesn't play the victim, so that if other people, he can find out other people who are disobeying, you know, maybe, so he can find excuse for his own disobedience. But this is a very important trait of a mature person. He does not blame other people. He does not. He makes all effort to take responsibility of what has happened, you know, maybe his circumstances. And he sees God, right? Providence, that we are learning on Sunday. Providence, providence, providence. A mature person sees providence. So that's why it's very important that we control our tongue in our trials and testing and not blame other people. So here we see that we can slander another brother. The word speaking evil against is to slander. And the word actually means to talk down about of some other person, okay, to talk down, to bring them down. So it can be speaking against their actions or their motives or the manner of their, you know, the way they do things, their habits, anything that they do, like, you know, you are like inspecting them. Why do they do like this? They should do like this. Maybe this is not the right thing to do. And speaking evil of a brother is like constantly putting him under the microscope and judging him in his actions, his motives, what are his habits. And the key here also in these passages is the word brother. Okay, this is not just any other person. He is a brother. Very, very important. A brother is someone who is putting the kingdom first. You know, a brother is someone who's not living for this world. A brother is someone who's dying for himself and he's living to God. He's heavenly minded. So, you know, this is a person that we are talking against. So it's very serious. It's very serious to God. And I think that's one of the reasons God hates the sins of the tongue. It's in Proverbs 6 verse 16. These six things the Lord hates. Yea, seven are an abomination unto him. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, and heart that devises wicked imaginations, feet that be swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaks lies, and he that sows discord among the brethren. So we see here three sins are directly, out of the six, three sins are directly related to the tongue. Lying, false witness, and sowing discord. And these all three, you know, we can understand, like lying, you just, you speak lies because you want to be better. You want to show you are better than your brother. False witness, maybe you want to get him to get in trouble, right? Sowing discord, you know, you are saying things about him to someone else so that that person, when he sees him the next time, he's kind of looking at him in another view, right? So all these sins are terrible and God hates them. God hates them. And why does God hate this sin? If you think about it, I think two things that we can think of is one of the reasons he hates them is because they are his servant, right? They are his servant. The brother is God's servant, and that's what Romans also tells us. They are his servant, and when we badmouth his servant, he's very upset. And the second reason, I think, one of the reasons that this is such a terrible sin is because character to God is very important. And in the Bible, character is more important than money, possession, wealth, property, and all these things, you know. So when we talk bad about a person, when we speak evil about a person, we hurt his character. We steal his character. And, you know, that is why it's such a grave sin. And we'll read the verse later. But in Proverbs 15 verse 5, it says, "The Lord, who shall abide in your hill, in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill? He that walks uprightly, works righteousness, speaks the truth in his heart. He that backbites not with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor takes up a reproach against his neighbor, in whose eyes a wild person is despised. But he honors them that fears the Lord, he that swears to his own hurt and changes not." So we see in this passage, you know, who is God pleased with? Who will God allow in his coming kingdom? It's a person who honors the people who fears him, fears God. He honors people. So if we honor, you know, if we honor people who fear God, we will not backbite and speak against them, right? It doesn't make sense. Like if we honor someone, if we respect someone, how can we also speak evil about them? It doesn't make sense. So we should ask ourselves question, you know, do we honor the brethren? Do we honor them because they fear God? And it makes a very clear distinction in this passage. There are those who honor and fear God, and then there are those who are sinners, I mean, who are living in rebellion. And a man of God, he despises those kind of people. He's not a friend to them. Okay. Not speaking evil and doesn't mean that we don't judge people at all and their actions, right? There are times when we need to judge people because they are sinning. That's the point, because they are sinning against the Lord. So why does God hate this sin is because we don't honor those who fear him. We don't honor the person who is God's servant. And the second reason, we understand why this is such a sin God hates is because good name is more important than wealth. Good name, character is more important. Proverbs 22:1. A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. So this verse tells us what God appreciates, what God finds highly, highly important and valuable. It is good character. And when we talk bad about, evil about a person, we are stealing. We are his character. So it's worse than stealing someone's goods in one way, right? So that's the reason this is such a grave sin. So we are commanded, you know, this verse is a command. We are commanded to stop it. To stop it. And when God tells us, then we can do it, of course, we can do it, right? And this commandment is so many places, but in Ephesians 2:27, it tells us that we should put away evil speaking. In verse 27, neither give place to the devil. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the things which is good, that he may have to give to him that needs. Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edification, that it may minister grace unto the hearers. And grieve not the Holy Spirit of God, whereby you are sealed unto the day of redemption. Let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. I mean, how simple that can be, right? It's not like complicated psychology. He's just saying, just stop it. Put it away. It's that simple. He's just saying, do it. Give it up. Give it up, right? Give it up. And instead, be kind. Be forgiving. Be tender-hearted. So, our words are powerful. It can, as it says here, but speak words that will build up, that will edify, that will encourage, that will minister grace to those who are here, to those who hear. So, we see that our words are very powerful, right? They are powerful. And it can really affect the person who hears them. I mean, that's how I think we are made, like those words kind of constantly go in our mind, right? And sometimes it happens like we heard, and that time we didn't understand everything. But maybe when we are sitting, you know, quietly, those thoughts come, and then we're like, oh, wow, what was that? Like, and we try to churn. So my point is, words, what we speak, are very, very powerful. They're very powerful. And you know, that's why in verse 27, he started off with, don't give place to the devil. Don't give place to the devil. And that's how we give place to the devil. When we start being casual with our mouth, the devil is going to have a lot of freedom in our life to work things the way he wants. Things to be done. But if we are good with our controlling with our tongue, then the devil doesn't have place in our life. So the commandment is so simple and so easy. Put it away. Just stop doing it. So as we started off in the beginning, that does not mean that we are worldly people, that we don't judge anything that is wrong. We don't correct, we don't rebuke, we don't tell people that what they are doing is wrong. It does not mean that. Because that is the world, right? That now the world and the society tells us that if you tell people that what they are doing is wrong, is sin, then you are hating and you don't have love. But that is not what we are talking about. In fact, the Bible clearly says that if you see a brother sin against you, rebuke him, and if he repents, forgive him. In Luke 13:3, take heed to yourself. If your brother sins against you, rebuke him, and if he repents, forgive him. So it is very important that if a brother sins against us, I think that's the key here. He sinned against you. It's not like, you know, he's doing things which I don't like personally. you know, he's eating food that I don't like, he's wearing clothes that I don't like, or whatever habits he has, or, you know, he's not treating me this certain way, a special way, or whatever. He's not, you know, like subjective things, I would say. I don't think that we should, talk bad against another person because of these reasons. But if a brother has sinned against you, like maybe he, you know, blatantly he planned and he did something which was wrong to you, then you should go to him and tell him. So very important here is, you know, you are going to him. That's the key, I think. You're not repeating this thing over and over again to a third person. That is the key here. You are going to the brother and talking to him. That is how things are different when we are trying to correct a brother. When we should try to correct a brother. And you know, this is our responsibility. When our brother sins against us, we should go and talk to him and tell him. This is our response. And if he's a brother, man, 100% he's going to accept it. Or, you know, there is going to be a reconciliation, of course, because he's a brother, he fears God, right? There is going to be a reconciliation. So we should go to the brother and talk to him. So that is our responsibility. But we are not here to correct, the world, right? That's what Paul says. Those who are outside, God judges them. And of course, we should tell and rebuke people. But that's not our main responsibility, to correct people who are not in the body of Christ. So we want to be clear that this speaking evil does not mean that we should not go to a brother and talk to him if we are sinned and wronged. But we should. In fact, you know, this is so important. And we should be such a brother that we are approachable. I should be a person in the congregation that people are free. I should try my best to be that kind of a person. That people are free to come and talk to me. And that is very important. Because that is what is going to help me to change, to correct, right? And that is a wise person. A wise person is very, very open for other people to tell him. This is so important. Otherwise, we will never become mature. Otherwise, we will never grow. And there are so many verses that speaks of a wise man who is very, very open for correction. In Proverbs 2 9 verse 8, reprove not a scorner, lest he hate you. Rebuke a wise man, he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be yet wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. So that is what we do. That is what the pulpit ministry is also. The pulpit ministry is not to keep on repeating to you how great you are. Of course, you might be great, and you might be doing well. But, you know, a wise person does not come to church for that. Really, a wise person comes to church because he wants to be challenged. He wants to know more. He wants to be told things which will help him to improve. That's a wise Christian. But that is, of course, not happening in our society now, right? People go to church not to be challenged. They don't go to be provoked and rebuked. But they go for other reasons. And they remain a fool. And they scorn when they are corrected. Because they have never been taught that they should be a wise person who receives correction. In Proverbs 27 verse 5, open rebuke is better than secret love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. Wow. Has your friend wounded you? Good, right? If he has, then it is good. Because he says, faithful are the wounds of your friend. Because why did he wound you? Because he is your friend. He wants good for you. He wants you to be better. Yeah, as a Christian and as one who pleases God. Ecclesiastes 7 verse 5. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the songs of fools. So it is better to go in a church where you are rebuked, where you are corrected, than to go to a church where You hear the songs of fools, you know. And I think that's what, you know, the mega churches and all, this is what they're all about. They are just singing songs. Not that songs are bad, but they're entertainment, right? They're just pleasing their flesh. So you know, a brother is humble. He is open to people's criticism. And that's how we should also, like, I have people criticized me, have people wronged me, and how have I taken that? Very important questions, right? To ask ourselves. So, as a disciple, as a Christian, I should be open to correction. I should be open to a criticism. And not be offended. Not go in defensive. Not get insecure. Not to definitely hate people who correct us. Because remember, it's the Lord. It's the Lord who brings it. And God is the one who brings these, brings correction in our life ultimately. So my point was that as Christians, we should challenge each other. We should correct each other. Because we are friends, right? And our purpose is so that we grow more in our faith, so that we become better in pleasing the Lord. So having said that, evil speaking, there are good examples of people who spoke evil against a brother and God judged them. One example is Miriam and Aaron. They spoke evil against Moses. In Numbers 12 verse 1, Miriam and Aaron spoke evil against Moses. Spake against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married. For he had married an Ethiopian woman. And they said, "Has the Lord indeed spoken only by Moses? Has he not spoken also by us?" And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very meek about all the men which were upon the face of the earth. So we see a very good example of, you know, Moses was not sinning. I don't think that God had told Moses that he, or I'm not sure, but there was any law, some kind, that they, he cannot marry this Ethiopian woman. So he was not sinning, but he did something which was outside the box, probably, right? He did something. You got to agree that he did something that would really make people think, and why is Moses doing that, right? So he did do something which would put a question mark. But the way they handled it was very wrong. They started talking among themselves, right? They should have gone to Moses. Moses, you know, I'm just thinking, maybe this was, is that the right thing to do? But they started talking about themselves, and it led to, their conclusion was that maybe Moses is not really the only man of God, and that he is not the one that he really thinks that he is. And we all are holy and we all are spiritual. So I think that's the sin that they committed, right? The conclusion that they came up with, and they spoke against Moses, and God was very upset. And in verse 8, with him, God said, "With him I speak mouth to mouth, even apparently, and not in dark speeches. And the similitude of the Lord shall he behold. Wherefore then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?" And the anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed. And the cloud departed from off the tabernacle, and behold, Miriam became leprous, white as snow. And Aaron looked upon Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. So, you know, the key here is God is asking them, were you not afraid? You know, and that is what we should be, right? Are we not afraid to speak against another brother? We should be. That's what God is saying. You should be. Were you not afraid to speak against my servant? So that is what is God, you know, saying to us. Are you not afraid to speak about someone who worships me, who serves me, and he's my servant? And we also have other examples, like David's older brother judging David when he came to bring them food. They judged him that, you are not, your heart is not right, and you've just come here to, you know, for wrong reason. Then David dancing before the Lord in 2 Samuel 6, his wife judged and speak evil against him. And God judged her. But we also see, right, Nathan correcting David for his sin. So it's not like we cannot tell the person. But Nathan, whom did Nathan go to? He went to David. He did not go to other people. So, other thing we learn is, you know, from this example of Moses, we don't know all the facts, right? Like, Miriam and Aaron did not know all the facts. They just saw the outward and they judged. So, before judging and before speaking, we should make sure that we have all the facts. And another example is when Paul judged the high priest, when the high priest told someone to strike him, Paul said to him, God will strike you, you whitewashed wall, for you sit to judge me according to the law, and do you command me to be struck contrary to the law? And those who stood by said, Do you revile God's high priest? Then Paul said, I did not know. So I think we can learn from here. Like, Paul is basically saying that if he was aware what he was doing before, he would not have said that. That's what I think we can get from there. And so we should be very careful, right? Whether we have all the facts. And, you know, especially in subjective things, I mean, we definitely don't have all the facts. So it's not so easy to have all the facts. So we don't have all the facts, and God does. So that's why we need to wait on God, be patient. Then another reason is, another place we should not judge is we should not judge weak faith. A brother who is growing in the faith, who needs time, who needs more encouragement. No, that God clearly says we should not judge. And again, I think in this passage in Romans 14 verse 4, this is not blatant rebellion against God. You know, no, this is what I want to do. Though it is clearly said in the scriptures that this is sin. But this is a weak brother who is persuaded that what he is doing is fine with God. And it's not us. It is not maybe something that we would like to do, like what we eat or what the things we wear and these things. But, or, you know, this brother, in this case, maybe he was keeping certain days as more important. And maybe he was doing a fasting or he was praying or something. And he's saying that don't judge such a person. Don't judge such a person. In Romans chapter 14 verse 1, receive one who is weak in faith. So in the church, not everyone is going to be strong in faith. Like, they are going to be different degrees of faith. And we should receive those who are weak in faith. But not to dispute over doubtful things. Doubtful things. For one believes he may eat all things, but he who is weak eats only vegetables. Let not him who eats despise him who does not eat. And let not him who does not eat judge him who eats, for God has received both. So it goes both ways, right? Maybe this brother thinks that killing animals is not a good thing to do. That's why maybe he's eating just vegetable. But both of them should not be judging each other. Who are you to judge another servant? To his own master he stands or fall. Indeed, he will be made to stand, for God is able to make him stand. But why do you judge your brother? Or why do you show contempt for your brother? For we shall all stand before the judgment seat of Christ. For it is written, As I live, saith the Lord, every knee shall bow to me, and every tongue shall confess to God. So then each of us shall give account of himself to God. Therefore, let us not judge one another any more, but rather resolve this, not to put a stumbling block or a cause of fall in our brother's way. So this is what our concentration should be. That we are not causing another brother problems in his spiritual life, right? By bringing up petty things. Like, these are all distractions. Again, the key here is weak in faith. Maybe he needs more time. Maybe he's persuaded at that point, he's persuaded what he's doing is right. So, and maybe this is not clearly defined in the Bible that this is how it should be done. So we should not be the one who judge his actions. He stands and falls alone before God. Now that is the important thing to understand here. Like ultimately, what we do, one day we will stand before God and give an answer to God. And we are not the fruit inspectors. God is. We are not the one who are analyzing and, you know, coming to conclusions about other people's faith. We preach the word and we make people responsible. Like they are responsible to study, think about it and apply it in their own life. We tell others and then we are occupied with our own salvation, right? Work out your own salvation. So our focus is on our own works, not on the works of my brother. God is the one who will judge. God is the one who will inspect all our works. Then the remaining of this verse says, you know, judging a brother is the same as judging the law of God. So this is very serious. When we, you know, become a stumbling block, and you know, we have fight and dispute over things which are not sin, and we evaluate weak people who have weak faith, we are doing a very serious thing. Like we are becoming judge. We are saying, you know, I am the one who has made the laws, and this is what it should be followed. This is very serious. So we can look at it in two ways. First is when I am saying that the law that God has given is no good, I know better. This is how the law should be. That's what one way of saying that I become a judge of the law. The second way is to become a judge of the law is when I am clearly disobeying the law, where the law gives mercy. In the law, the supreme is the love, right? So when I'm judging, when I'm speaking evil, when I'm rendering judgment on other people, I am, you know, overstepping this law, where the law wants to give mercy, and the law wants to be long suffering, and that's all over in the book of James, that the law is the law of royal law of liberty, which is love your neighbor as yourself. And this was clearly in the scriptures that we are not supposed to be judge, but we are supposed to be to help our brother. We should not be a stumbling block. We should not stand in his way. In Leviticus 19 verse 16, it says, "Thou shalt not go up and down as a talebearer among the people. Neither shalt thou stand against the blood of thy neighbor. I am the Lord." So I am the Lord is saying, I am telling you this. This is what I want you to do. Right? So that is the law. So when I am not following that, I am judging the law. I am saying, I know better. I take matters in my own hand. "Thou shalt not hate thy brother in thy heart. Thou shalt in any wise rebuke thy neighbor and not suffer sin upon him." So again, it comes back to the same thing. It doesn't mean that we are, you know, we don't judge sin and we don't judge evil. "Thou shalt not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of thy people, but thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I am the Lord." I am the Lord. So he's saying, I am the Lord. This is what I tell you to do. I want you to be merciful. I want you to forgive. I want you to be long-suffering. I want you to not to bear grudge, not to take revenge, not to stand against, not be a tale-bearer. So that is the law. Then in James, we know that when we speak evil, we speak against the law of mercy. In James chapter 2 verse 8, "If you fulfill the royal law according to the scriptures, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, you do well. But if you show partiality, you commit sin and are convicted by the law as a transgressor. So speak and so do as those who will be judged by the law of liberty. For judgment is without mercy to the one who shows no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment." So law has always been merciful to the weak and to the repentant. I mean, we cannot miss that, right? The whole priesthood, the sacrifices, it was all for the sinner who was repented and he wanted to have fellowship with God. And the law says that mercy triumphs over judgment. So when I judge, when I speak against a brother, I am overstepping this law. And when I speak against a brother, I speak against the law that protects that brother. Right? The law is protecting him, and the law wants to give him forgiveness. The law wants to give him mercy. And I'm saying no. I want to repeal that. So the law wants to give mercy, but I want to give judgment. When we become judge, the other sin that we commit is most likely we are being partial. Because no human, you know, we are not perfect, right? And the question that we need to ask ourselves is, first of all, is am I doing that same thing that I am condemning in other people? And the scripture specifically tells us to do that. That before telling other people, before correcting other people, or before condemning or speaking, the Bible specifically tells that please, first you make sure you are keeping that. And so when I don't keep it and when I judge others, again I am putting myself above the law. So being a judge of other people and speaking evil of others does not make me obedient to the law. I think we get deceived many times that when we spot the wrong in other people, somehow we are deceived into thinking that I am keeping that, you know, very well. But it is not true. We should stop ourselves and first think that am I obeying those things that I am spotting in other people? Very important. Therefore, thou art inexcusable, O man, whosoever thou art that judges. For wherein thou judges another, thou condemn thyself. For thou that judges does the same things. So, here this man is deceived. And he is talking to the Jews who have rejected Jesus Christ. And of course, to us also who are in the church. Very important that, you know, when we are condemning and judging other people, there is a very good chance that we have not evaluated our own life in the light of that thing that we are judging others. But we are sure that the judgment of God is according to truth against them which commit such thing. And thinkest thou this, O man, that judges them which do such thing, and doest the same, that thou shalt escape the judgment of God? No, you will not, right? For not the hearers of the law are just before God, but the doers of the law shall be just. And we can put here, not those who judge according to the law are just before God, but those who are the doers of the law, they are just before God. So judging others does not make me just. It does not. But keeping those things makes me just. Very important, right? So all our energy and our focus should be really on whether I am keeping those things. That's what our focus should be. And notice his, behold, thou art called a Jew and rests in the law and makes thy boast of God. So here there is a Jew. He rests, he says, you know, I am follow the law. I am a Jew. And he is making his boasting in God. And he's saying those Gentiles, they don't have the law and they don't keep this, they don't keep this, they don't keep this, and they don't keep all these things. So to this Jew, he is asking, are you keeping those things that you are saying that those Gentiles are not keeping? And you boast and knowest his will and approves the thing that are more excellent, being instructed out of the law, and art confident that thou thyself are a guide of the blind, a light of them which are in darkness, an instructor of the foolish, a teacher of babes, which has the form of knowledge and of the truth in the law. Thou therefore which teaches another, teachest thou not thyself? Thou that preaches a man should not steal, dost thou steal? So very, very clear teaching that before we judge others, he's saying, please be careful please make sure that you are keeping that. When you tell other people that they are stealing, they should not be stealing, make sure first you are not doing that. And that will really help us, you know, to put things in perspective. And let us not put our time and energy in judging other servants, but judging ourselves, making sure that whether we are keeping what we are told in the law. Then verse 12, there is one lawgiver who is able to judge and destroy. Who art thou that judges another? So our role, God has not given us this role of judging and evaluating other people's faith. Because there is only one person who can do that, and that is Jesus Christ. Only He has been given this authority exclusively. Only God. And no other human being is given this role. So we are called to abide by the law. That should be our main focus. To be obedient. And we are called to be servants who are getting ready to answer to God for our own life, and not for the life of others. And that is also very important to understand. You know, we are not responsible for other people's life. Really, at the end of the day, we can only tell and help them. But end of the day, we are not really responsible. And God doesn't want us to be. He's saying, I will take care of it. I am the one who will judge every man properly. And very important, He who's able to save and destroy, He also has the power to be the judge. Because we cannot do anything. You know, we cannot save a person. We cannot render to him the proper judgment that maybe he deserves, right? Because God is the one who can also execute the judgment that he thinks is fit for sin. Like in case of Miriam, he made them lepers. I mean, can man do that? What would they do? Like, they would maybe just stone them, or you know, we can... I'm just giving an example. Like, we cannot execute judgment in a righteous way, the way God wants it. But only God can. He has the ability to save and to destroy. And therefore, He can be the judge. Amazing how powerful God is, right? I mean, He's saying, I will make sure every man answers to the things that he has done. Because I am the one who has the power to save and to destroy. I'll make sure he gets what he deserves. That's what God is saying. And you don't step the boundary. Don't play my position, right? Don't put on my role. So man can just talk, right? But God can do. He can bring the judgment to pass. And he will be righteous. His judgment will be perfect. There will be no arguments. There will be no hearing from both sides. Right? I mean, he knows everything. His judgment will be perfect. What he says in that day, done. That's it. It will not be based on what this person said or what that person said, the rumors, the heresies, the gossips, right? It will not be based on that. So it's so different in how man does it, and it will be so different the way God does it. And it will be impartial. I mean, we will not be able to say, but God, got this and he got this. Why should I get this? Right? Those things will not be there. It will be perfect. What God will do in that day will be perfect. So that's why, you know, only he is able to fulfill this role of a lawgiver and a judge. Man cannot. So in closing, I think Jesus gave us a great, great advice in Matthew chapter 7 verse 1. Of how we should, get involved in judging other people. Judge not, that ye be not judged. For with what judgment you judge, you shall be judged. And with what measure you meet, it shall be measured unto you again. And why behold thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but consider not the beam that is in thy own eye? And how wilt thou say to thy brother, let me pull out the mote out of thine eye, and behold a beam is in thy own eye? Thou hypocrites, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly. to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye. So Jesus gives us a very good advice, perfect advice, and I think we just went through that, that before correcting others, we should evaluate our own life. Very important. Making sure that we are not looking, we don't have logs in our eye when we are evaluating and judging a brother. Are we walking the walk before we talk the talk? Are we, you know, what we are telling that other brother should be doing, are we doing that first ourselves? You know, are we looking at other person through envy and jealousy? Right? Many times it happens that way. Like people I don't like, I tend to be very quick to judge them and speak against them. So that's a big beam in my eye, right? Like when I'm envy and jealous, how can I judge? It's impossible. Another beam is like when I lack information, as we just talked about. Another beam would be when I lack personal experience. Like, have I lived, like, have I seen everything in life? I don't think so, right? Have I, like, gone through the struggles, especially the person that I'm about to judge? Have I gone through the struggles, the pain, the problems that he might be facing? Most probably no. Have I known the problems that maybe he's facing grave difficulties. Maybe he's very poor. Maybe he is really finding things difficult in his life. Have I been through that? Like, unless I have been through that, I will never understand that. And if I have been through that, you know, automatically sympathy will come, right? Sympathy and long suffering will kick in. So I should ask myself, am I the person who has gone through this experience? Or have I lived long enough, or, you know, have I dealt with these kind of things long enough to really understand what this person is going through? The other big beam that we can have in our own eye is like lust and desires, like we learned in last messages. Like James said, most of the problems happen because of your own lust and desires. Like, you want this, you want this, you want this. And are you seeing the situation and are you seeing that person through the lust that is in your own heart? Like, you want this to happen, so you are judging. So Jesus is saying that make sure you don't have beams in your eye. Make sure that you are living a clean life. And of course that, you know, if we are living a life close to God, then of course we will be sympathetic, we will be long-suffering, we will judge righteously. And another advice Jesus is giving is make sure that, you know, the more merciful you are, the more long-suffering, that much mercy God will give you. So another good motivation, right, not to be quick to judge others. Because we want to have mercy from God on that day. So this is a very important commandment from God. And Titus 2 verse 3 says, speak evil of no one. Be peaceable, gentle, showing all humility to all men. So this is a command with a promise. If I do this, then I will see good days. 1 Peter 3 verse 10, for he that will love life would mean someone who desires a good life. And I'm sure we all desire a good life. And, you know, life in this life and also in the life to come, right? We desire a good life in the life to come. If you desire that and you want to see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips that they speak no guile. Wow, what a great promise that if I do that, I will see good days. Amen?
Any comments or questions?